Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for the sex. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast with your hosts, Salsa
and Jenna.
And special guest,
William Bradshaw.
Get really, really up close on that mic.
Oh, I'll eat that microphone.
There we go.
Just move it closer.
All right. So, as you may have noticed,
We got rid of Matt
and replaced him with a much better person.
Right?
This is 301, and that means season 4 has begun, and we have gotten rid of Matt.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Killed him in his sleep.
Fucking time. Took us over 300 episodes to figure it out.
I know, right?
God, the dead weight.
It's we figured it out eventually. Better late than never is really the important thing here.
I think 6 years later. Look, we're not very quick.
We get around to it eventually.
That is pretty much our motto, isn't it?
This is the most passive aggressive firing we've ever been under.
Well, it's perfect for Minnesota though.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Taking 6 years to finally, you know, decide to I'm sorry, I feel like maybe our
This just isn't working out.
To be fair, okay, so Matt may or may not be around due to a rehearsal for a show of some sort.
That has been talked about ad nauseum on this show.
Fuck that.
I know, right? So he's not actually like dead and gone and removed.
He's dead to me.
Dead to you.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't know we're not going to let him back.
Yeah, this is...
And he never listens to this podcast, so he'll find out in about a month or so.
Yeah, he's just going to be like, I have rehearsals, and I haven't been on the show for a while. No, you just keep having rehearsals. It's okay.
But the show's done. No, you just keep rehearsing.
Seriously, we changed the night. It's on a different night. Just stay home. But, so we're toasting the fact that he's not here, because fuck that guy. And we are toasting with Glen Grant Single Malt Scotch Whiskey, aged 16 years.
Ooh.
So, we'll find out how good this one is.
Mm-hmm.
Smells
really
good. Oh my
god, we're drinking whiskey as old as my daughter. My daughter is
old
enough to be aged.
That just made
I'm not okay with this at all. Oh.
I'm pretty okay with this whiskey, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's good. That evaporates nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is a pretty good scotch.
Ooh. Man, again, thank you to Cedius Scotchbringer for bringing the scotch a while ago. But
it's a lot more bold on the front than some of the other ones that I've had.
And, you know, I'm used to drinking very peaty scotches as well, and this does not have that, you know, really strong peat taste, which I've become accustomed to when I think of scotch.
Yeah.
But that's because, you know, I like that old woody, you know, flavor after I've drank my scotch.
Well, the second scotch later in the show may have that in store for you.
Ooh, ooh.
Honestly, Cedius... After Cedius dropped off the scotch, I was like, okay, can you kind of sort these into more peaty and less peaty ones? That way we can kind of, you know, start out light and not have, you know, moss on our tongue and then follow it up with something really light.
Mm.
And he was like, okay, so he kind of sorted them into two general piles, and it was like, that looks pretty good. And so I took one from the one pile and one from the other pile, and I don't know how peaty it is, but it was in the other pile, so we'll find out.
Well, we're going to taste it, and we're going to be like, the hell is this shit?
Yeah. It's not like they haven't drunk thousands of scotches, and he has to try to remember all of them at once. So
look, if he's a true scotch nerd, then he claims to be. And then we will have peat later.
Anyway, so we have our scotch, and we have our hosts, the ones that are actually going to stick around, that is. So, Jenna, what you been up to?
What have I been up to? God, I mean, there's that Renaissance Festival thing. That's
oh
been
my God,
a good
lame.
Chunk of my time. So now I'm about to unload my life. It'll be fun.
Woo-hoo.
Just so that listeners are aware, I'm going through a bunch of life stuff right now. Jesse's a very private person, so I kind of have a hard time talking about this in depth, but suffice it to say that he and I are going to couples counseling, and we are going to be in separate abodes for a little bit, at which point we'll figure out if that's a continuous thing or not. Our hope is not. Things are looking positive, but in the meantime, I'm moving in a week, so that's a thing.
So, just to be clear, all you listeners, this is not the end of their relationship.
No. No, we are still in a relationship. We are still working on things. I am not available. Back the fuck off, asshole. Damn you it. Know who you are. But yeah, it does mean that, you know, there's figuring out moving stuff and moving stuff. I'm trying to figure out moving stuff. I signed for, I got approved for an apartment, so I'll be signing for that on Friday.
Well, I was just about to ask where at, but I suppose that would be a bad idea.
It is a shithole. But it's a month-to-month lease.
And those really go hand-in-hand together, shitholes and month-to-monthers.
I mean, I really didn't expect to find anything classy on a...
So your neighbors are all going to be... This is a halfway house, is what you're saying.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. But it is closer to Jess's school.
Oh, that's
which,
good.
Which is going to be nice for her. It's also closer to work by about 10 minutes, which... Man, if you can cut out that commute on 62 in any way, shape, or form, you do it.
Mm. So I don't know the two of you situation particularly about as far as possessions go, but how much overlap in the Venn diagram of owning things?
I mean, it's been almost 3 years, so we've got a decent amount of overlap.
But I mean, some couples even then still have a pretty clear delineation between this is my stuff and your stuff.
Certain things. Books. We know whose books are whose. Like, that's just hands down. Fuck that. We know it. We went through DVDs, video game consoles, like most of that was still kind of easy. Games were a little harder. We've bought a lot of games together.
I see.
So
your weaponry is pretty well clearly delineated though.
Oh, weapons are babies.
Yeah.
Like no, there is no joint custody in those. Either you own it or somebody else
does.
So, yeah. No, like, things like that, that's all sort of... puzzles. Puzzles are hard.
Oh, yeah.
Because we get puzzles together, and we do puzzles together, and, yeah.
Like, jigsaw puzzles?
Oh, yeah.
Like, Rubik's Cubes, or the whole nine yards?
I mean, we like all sorts of puzzles. We've done... We're big into jigsaw puzzles. There's also, like, there's the 3D puzzles.
Right.
The little foam things. Mm-hmm. There's also those metal sculpture-y type things where you have to, like, take out the pieces and put them together. That's more like a model, though, really, because it comes with instructions.
Oh, does it? Oh, yeah. Lame.
Oh, yeah, but you don't need to use the instructions. Like, true. I have to be a big puzzle person as well.
Yeah.
So have you ever been to, I think it's the Brain Store, and it has this little orb where if you can solve the puzzle to these orbs, each one is individual, it'll give you, like, a GPS location, like a geocache.
What?
And if you go there, there's, like, money hidden or buried around, and you can actually...
What?
Yeah, no, this is an actual thing, but it is supposed to be some of the most difficult puzzles that you come across.
My God.
So it's this little orb thing, and the outside of it has like hieroglyphics on it, and so you need to solve the hieroglyphics puzzle, and then it opens up to another puzzle inside, which then I've never even...
Do they somehow make sure that geographically they're selling the puzzles close to where the cache is?
No idea whatsoever.
Because that would really suck to solve it and then be like, well, I don't want to have to go to Toronto.
You know, I barely know...
No offense to anyone in Toronto, but...
Toronto.
Fucking Canada.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, I have no idea about that. Or it might have, like, an email voucher. But my understanding is, when I spoke to the guy, is that it gives you a GPS location in your head there. And it's between, I think it's like $25 and $500. Like, hidden
there.
Oh, my
God.
And they're just hidden around.
That sounds really fun.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
The one
they have
thing...
different difficulties. It sounds really cool.
That's but like way better than, like, the St. Paul Winter Carnival medallion.
Right, precisely. I used to do that when I was a kid with my great aunt, and we would go hunting for it.
The one that I always simultaneously wanted to try, and as an IT person, cringe, is the ones where they just have, like, a USB stick cemented into a wall.
Oh, yeah,
somewhere, and you just walk up and plug your laptop into the wall.
Oh, God, that's like the glory hole.
Exactly.
You have no idea what...
But it's one of those... It's a scavenger hunt thing where they've got these legitimate ones that... But at the same time, anybody can walk up and load one of those up. And so, like, on one hand, that is clever as hell, and I love the use of the technology. And on the other hand... I'm not plugging my computer into that.
No, you need like a burner computer.
Exactly,
you go to
like a Goodwill and buy a $10 laptop with a USB port and say, all right, let's figure this crap out.
$10 laptop? Where the hell are you getting your shit?
Apparently a Goodwill.
$10 might be an exaggeration.
A little bit of a hyperbole there.
Right, my most recent Goodwill find was a $30 player piano, which was normally $500, and I got this player piano down in Las Vegas for $30, and because I had looked at it a couple weeks beforehand, and I'm like, oh, and I was almost willing to drop the $500 just so I can say that I own a player piano, because I also play as well, and I'm like, I couldn't justify it. And then 2 weeks later, I look at it, price tag's $30, the $300 scratched out, and I had to go to the people. I'm like, what is this? And they're like, are you interested in taking it? I'm kind of interested if this is the price. And they're like, oh, God, please take this away from, get rid of this. Because the kids had been going along for the last 2 weeks and just pounding on it. And just in, like, constantly.
So they dropped it
for their sanity. But this player piano ended up being, like, 900 pounds. It was the heaviest thing that I've ever had to try and move. And I just happened to get lucky that a buddy of mine from L.A. had been in town. And so the two of us, you know, hauled this player piano to my house. It's still not actually even in my house. It's living in my garage just because, you know, getting it up the two steps into the house where I live in Vegas was impossible for the two of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll probably drive over to a Home Depot and I'll hire a couple guys, you know, who sit out at Home Depot, which is a thing when you live in the Southwest that people just hang out outside of Home Depot to look for work.
Nice.
That's awesome. Any other fun finds at Goodwill or anything like that?
Ooh, particularly fun finds. You know, well, I do a lot of costuming, and I used to do LARPing stuff as well. And absolutely through and through. And so hunting for costume pieces, there was always a treat. My Renaissance Festival cloak, which actually had period embroidery, I got for $10 here and there.
What?
And like that red cloak. I don't know if you've ever seen me wear my red cloak out there.
I don't know that I have.
I only when it's cold out, which it hasn't been quite yet. But I have this red cloak.
It's teasing at it.
My Minnesota blood has thinned since I moved down to Las Vegas. It's a little chilly now. Oh, it's not 70 degrees. Oh God, I'm going to die.
My wife was at Goodwill. This has been a few years now. This is a good 5 years ago, and she found one of these dining room tables that the leaf folds up into the middle and is just stored inside the table. You know what I mean? Like, you pull the sides out and the leaf folds in half and just rotates into the table.
Neat.
And then you slide the cover over it.
So
you
don't have to science.
So you don't have to store a leaf somewhere.
Right.
And she got it at Goodwill for like $5.
See, what I love about Goodwill is that it's like one of the last stops for interesting things. Like, people have had these things in their house for 30 years sometimes and, you know, just collecting dust, and, you know, somebody passes away or they move and they're like, well, let's get it all to Goodwill. And so you can find, like, really, really interesting crap. The other cool thing that I just got was I got a – oh, God. Like, it was a – map from the – it was like an 1800s map, but it was all in gold leaf and absolutely gorgeous.
Neat.
And it had, like, the winds blowing on the four directions.
Yeah,
and, you know, the
and they hear there be dragons and all that other –
the whole nine yards, but it was actually designed from that. And I got it for $10.
Nice.
Like, because I like decorating my house with random crap like that.
Well, yeah. So. Jenna, any cool finds at Goodwill? What's your best?
Oh God,
thrift shop.
Best?
Not necessarily Goodwill. It can be some consignment shop or something like that.
Okay, but. So there is a costuming. There is a glacé coat that I wear. That is actually a modified Curry shirt. Indian wear.
Oh, okay.
Like the long tunic-y kind.
Oh, yeah.
No idea what you were talking about. Nope. I was just nodding in agreement.
Indian tunic shirt type thing.
Yeah, and I think so I know what you're talking about.
It's got, like, gold woven like elephants and stuff on on a tealish, greenish, tealish background. So yeah, I got that for $5 and just basically cut up the front and put some lacing in it. And I actually got to use, because it had like a tie in the front, so I just took off the tie for that and attached it under the bust where I cut it out because belly dancer. And,
right.
Yeah, so it's even got like matching ties that are always there. I never lose ribbons or anything because it's right there.
Rock on.
So.
Tealish sounds like the princess from He-Man.
Yeah. that's their lesser known cousin, actually.
Yeah. There was a Teela. Who was Teela?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, years ago. I found just recently one of these stealth recliners.
A stealth recliner. So, wait, is it like completely black and, you know, has advanced metals on it?
It wears a ninja mask.
Right.
You are actually sitting right next to it. It upstairs in the living room.
Oh.
It looks like a wingback chair.
Okay.
It looks like a wingback chair, except the footrest folds up and hides underneath it. So unlike a big lazy boy, which is huge, and this looks like a classy, like, Victorian wingback chair. It looks very, very clean and stuff
and
like
elegant.
That. But you sit down and you push back and the feet flip out from underneath it. And nice. And you've got a recliner. And I picked that up for like $10.
See?
Well done. Savers.
Absolutely. Yeah. See, that's where all the coolest treasures get found.
Oh god,
People always like, less so now, but I remember like 10, 15 years ago. Shopping at Goodwill or Savers, people would sneer at that. And it's just like, what are you talking about? The coolest shit you can get there.
Right? Well, and so here's the thing, is that it's become really, really trendy to, oh God, what do they call it? Like, there's a term for it, but basically people that have money buying into basically poor people stuff.
Was it derelict?
No, that it was like,
sorry, that was a movie reference. So you
I don't understand.
Yeah, that was from Zoolander.
I've actually seen Zoolander.
Yes, I made the reference as soon as you said Zoolander.
I've seen Zoolander and I'm still not remembering. anyway, but it's something chic is the term. And it's basically, you know, like, upcycling and other things like that. Going out to eat at restaurants that serve poor people food at extravagant prices.
Sounds very hipster.
Like, yeah, it is. It is incredibly hipster. And so, like, there's a part of me, like, you know, 10 years ago, I would go to Savers, and I knew that we all were broke. Like, you know. And now you go in, and you're like, are they trying to be me? Because it's weird. Like, you know what I mean? And there are some people that call it, like, class appropriation. I'm not sure I go that far, but there's still something like, am I trendy now? Like, am I...
Jenna,
you'll
never be trendy.
I mean, yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah.
But are other people like me trendy now?
People similar to you, but not you, are trendy.
Okay. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I'll just write on the coattails of
your own almost trendiness, like,
right? That
it's like a lemniscate. Oh, you're riding on your own coattails, but you're kind of slowly spiraling down like a flying squirrel. You can't actually flap your wings. It's like get some lift.
On a chain wrapped around a post that you're slowly spiraling closer to the post as you wrap around it.
But then that's the other question. So now I have like a really well paying job. Do I get to shop at the poor people places? Still, like, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it even matters.
I don't get it.
What I love about these shops is that you can just find cool random stuff, which, you know, would be just, you know, a half step away from being thrown away. Mm-hmm. Like, and this is stuff which already has history and love into it.
Right.
And, you know, so when you start populating your house, it doesn't look like everything's you know,
IKEA,
right?
Precisely, yeah. IKEA-y, and so you can get all sorts of, you know, like I love finding claw-footed furniture. Mm. Like I always hunt for the claw-footed furniture, and you don't find that at places like IKEA. You find that at the Savers and the Goodwills.
Yeah, you do.
So,
whenever I walk into any shop like that, Goodwill or Savers or anything like that, I always head straight to the drinkware.
Mm.
Because yeah. I have heard so many stories of people finding Mac mugs,
and I have yet to find one.
I look for Mac mugs, and I still have not found one.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about here, there used to be a person at the Renaissance Festival by the name of Mac who made leather mugs. And these things are worth more than their weight in gold at these days.
Mm.
And it is a matter of pride and bragging rights to have a lower number. Because every single Mac mug has a number on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you know, each one has a unique individual number. And the smaller the number, the earlier it was made. Mm-hmm. And there are people who I know of who have walked into a Goodwill and found a 3-digit Mac mug. Mm. And it's just like, one of these days I'm going to walk in there.
No whammy. Playing the lottery.
Leather mug made by Mac for $5.
Like, right. It's like playing the lottery, only you don't have to buy a ticket, so it's not stupid.
Yeah, but, you know, in spending time. I think my cracked cup, I was told, was one of the first mugs after Mac had passed away that his apprentice had officially taken over. So the leather mug that I have was one of the first non-Mac mugs. So I don't have the nifty stamp, but I still have one of the numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Same design, same.
Right, same design, same
but
nine yards.
It doesn't have his particular maker's mark on it.
No.
Yeah.
I have my Mac mug upstairs, and it was one of the last.
Ah, see.
I have two really, really fun stories. Salsa, I told you this one this weekend, so Will, this is for you.
Ooh, okay.
So, I was contacted on Facebook a few months ago by someone.
Yes.
And it's the ex-boyfriend of somebody that I lived with 13, 14 years ago.
Okay.
And he was like, hey, so I've been in Texas, but I just bopped over to Minnesota to look through my storage shed. I don't know. And I found a box of all this old Renaissance Festival stuff that I think might be yours. And I was like, oh my God, tell me there's a leather mug in it.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, yeah, it's got like a Celtic cross on it. I'm like, oh my God, you found my Mac mug. I've been missing that thing for years.
Really?
I thought it like I had accidentally left it somewhere because I'm that stupid.
Mm.
But yeah, so he will be back in Minnesota within a few months. And I will finally get my Mac mug returned to me.
After 14 years.
Yeah.
The reunion.
It's like the journey home, except with a leather mug.
It's not just a Mac mug for me. It's the Mac mug that I got when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is my leather mug.
Right.
So.
And that's the other thing that I think a lot of listeners aren't really appreciating is just how important these mugs are to people.
Yeah.
It's not just that they're a leather mug and that you have a higher number. It's these mugs, everybody knows their mug because they all have these unique designs on them and everybody knows when they got them. And this mug, like you were saying earlier, with some of the stuff you can find at these consignment shops, these mugs are loved.
Oh, yeah.
These mugs are cherished, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
if you can find one, it's like I said, it's gold.
Mm-hmm. I've actually had my mug returned to me after it's been lost out at the festival because people recognized, you know, that one was mine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've left it, you know, a place on one or two occasions and people picked it up, you know, other employees and like, holy crap, this is clearly Will's mug.
Right.
Because they, you know, mine is a little extra weird.
Go ahead. Mine is a generic design, but
right.
it's still like that was my first leather mug. I knew I was responsible enough to have one when I was purchased a Mac mug.
Mm.
But the other thing about the number on those mugs is there is even still today a registry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like when you buy your mug, you put your name next to the number.
Yep.
So that if that does get lost, people can could return the mug to the shop and get it back to you.
Yep.
So the people that I'm talking, like Terry Foy, found one just a couple years ago. And, you know, the first thing you do in that case is try to find the owner.
Yeah.
At, you know, because you go to the registry and you say, who is this? And if you can't find an owner, awesome, you get to keep it. Right. Great. But if you can find that owner and you return it to them...
All the karma points.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Seriously. You can go stab someone now. Like, that's basically how much karma you get for that.
Raiderly lost can go stab her a Mac.
Oh.
She was actually planning on retiring it, like, either at the end of that year. Like, she was starting to consider retiring it she didn't lose it. And then final day, for the final fire blast, she put her mug down backstage. And then... that was the end of it.
God.
And it was one of the ones that looked like it had the wood texture on it. So it looked like the leather mug was just a hunk of log.
Yep.
But yeah, she set it down backstage before the final thing we do on the final day of festival, and that was the last time she saw it.
That's sad.
That's one of those things we keep hoping that someday somebody will find that returner. So.
Oh my God, going back to Savers. Yes. He doesn't go back to Savers.
I know, right?
So I only live a few blocks away, and as I've been, like, clearing out the house, getting ready for the move, I keep making trips over with stuff. Because I'm moving from, like, a 1,500 square foot house to a 750 apartment right now.
Okay.
It seems like a good time to, like, clear out some stuff.
Absolutely.
Maybe I haven't been using. So I keep going over there. I don't know if you guys have ever made donations at Savers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you pull up.
Yep.
And your car runs over the little hose thing. And then a voice from the heavens starts speaking about Epilepsy Foundation.
You went to a different Savers than I did.
The one on Lake Street?
Yep. Yeah, no. Yeah. I dropped stuff off at the one in Bloomington.
Okay. So this voice comes up over the speakers. And it's talking about the Epilepsy Foundation and how your donation will go to helping children and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like... Jim Cunningham? Are you here?
It totally is
Jim Cunningham. Awesome. Doing that's amazing. Voiceover. But now every time I go to drop something off, I'm like, oh, it's like hanging out with Jim. Only he's talking about charity and not dick and fart jokes at a feast hall.
Raiderly and I do the same thing when we're watching TV. Some commercials will come on, and the commercial will get done, and Raiderly and I will be doing something, and we'll both look up and go, thanks, car. And then just continue doing it because our artistic director at Festival, Cara Hagerman, does a lot of voiceover work for commercials and stuff.
Mm.
And so we'll just be, we're tooling along. Something like, cars talking? What?
Oh, my God. My favorite voiceover thing. So Don Krasnowski.
Yep.
Local talent of great acting, of but repute. Also does voiceover.
We have talked about her ad nauseum on this show.
So I'm in the car, and I'm listening to this commercial about how wonderful it would be to lounge in a bathtub with a nice glass of Chardonnay, and I'm like, God, that really sounds like something Don would like. Wait a minute. That's Don's voice. Mm. That is something Don would like.
Except Don doesn't like Chardonnay.
Right now. Well, yeah, I think it may have been Merlot. I don't know. Okay. But it was one of those voice... I'm like, God, that really sounds like something Don wouldn't enjoy. Wait a minute.
The first time I
saw Don.
The first time I saw Don on TV, I almost lost my shit. Anyway. We should take a break. We'll come.
I have one more thing.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
When I talked with
Hurry
Dawn
up,
about that.
Hurry up, because I'm out of scotch.
God damn it. When I talked with Dawn about that, she was like, oh my God, that was like a thing I did years ago. Mm-hmm. Glad to hear it's still in circulation. So several years ago, about 6 or 7 years ago, I did a modeling shoot for Metro Transit.
Mm.
They were about to promote their the commuter program that they have, where if you, you know, take the bus, but then your bus is late, they'll send a cab out.
Ooh.
To come get you to work on time, things like that. So, you know, I was kind of in the background of one of those pictures that was a couple of bus benches, things like that. That was, like, again, like 7 years ago. So, recently my face has started popping up on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They have started recycling some of that old stuff, and now I am... A face, not the face, but a face promoting the MetroPass.
The side of a face.
Yeah, that's, I mean, three quarters of a face. quarters.
Three quarters. Okay, three quarters.
But yeah, so if you happen to see an ad on Facebook with a chick wearing a pink businessy kind of outfit,
looking happily out the window,
looking happily mm-hmm. out the window, enjoying her bus ride, that's me. And yeah, it was really weird when I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, 7 years ago, and it's still getting going.
So. As they say, Facebook is forever.
Oh, God. It didn't even start on Facebook.
I know.
It ended up there.
All right. So, I'm out of scotch, so we're going to take a break. Okay. And then we'll come back, and we will actually talk to Will about stuff that is
what?
Interesting.
Back to our guests.
I know, right?
Who does that
weird.
Shit?
It's kind of our... Kind of our we're going to try something new now that Matt's not here.
Oh, okay. Like hospitality.
I wouldn't go that far. Then
okay.
Then we're setting expectations.
Yeah, okay. No, that's fair.
All right. We'll come back at you in a bit.
If you guys like what you heard, come visit us on aonpodcast.com and leave a comment. Or you can send us an individual email at salsa, Matt, or Jenna at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
I'm glad. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Apropos of Nothing. I am still Salsa.
I'm still Jenna.
And I'm now Bob, but also known as Will.
Okay.
But he's not Matt, and that's the important thing.
That yes. most important thing about that.
Also, what's important is a scotch. We are drinking an Indian scotch. And by that I mean...
I was going to say, that is completely... It has to be from Scotland to be a scotch.
Well, this is... Okay, fair enough. This is a single malt whiskey.
Yeah, there you go.
But it is from India, and it is called Amrut, Porto Nova, single malt whiskey aged in oak barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find out.
Oh, that smells interesting.
Yeah, it's a very, very different taste than the scotches I've ever had
there's
before.
There's a flavor to the smell.
Oh, that is delightful.
Oh, oh.
There is almost a...
Like almost an Indian spice to the scotch as well.
I was almost going to say floral.
Yeah.
Not like licking a... licking a flower.
Elderflower.
But yeah, kind of like a elderflower, like a flower wine-ness to it, where kind of that velvety texture flavor to it.
Yeah, no, it's that first sip has
a little sweeter,
quite a punch, but then afterwards it really mellows nicely into that.
Oh, that's delightful.
Kind of florally, but it's still kicky. It's not like it's a delicate flower.
Oh no.
Not like
no.
me. I am a delicate fucking.
No, this
flower,
this is
the most delicate fucking flower I've ever met.
Right? Velvety and flavorful, but not.
It has
not
an elegance
a pushover.
To it.
Yeah.
It has an elegance.
All right. Oh, I'm gonna absolutely. This is my bottle now.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I'm all over this one. All right. But anyway, we have our guest Will Bradshaw, and the reason we asked Will to be on this show is because Will is a magician of renown.
Ooh.
And
renown.
Yeah.
Renown, not just a noun.
It's when you noun again.
Yes, it's when you
noun a second time, at least.
Yes. Indeed.
Noun.
So Will, I've known Will forever.
At least 12 years now. I've been working out at the festival, though I was not a magician for the full 12 years.
No, I forgot. You started out as a.
I started out working at the Renaissance Festival as a mime.
You heard it here first.
That's right.
I'm on a podcast.
It was ridiculous, and I won the Crack Cup, and Carr told me the main reason why
the
I won...
The Crack Cup being the...
Best New Performer out at the Renaissance Festival, and Carr told me the reason why I won it, one of the big reasons, is that I was a mime that everybody didn't hate, and they gave me the Best New Performer for that. And then after 3 years of basically screaming at my audience, because
I was the worst mime ever.
I had a sign that said the only good mime, and I would lay down in the street.
Depending on how you look at it, good or bad.
Right, but I would lay down in the street with the only good mime sign out, and then I would go and lay down dead in the street, and the joke was the only good mime is a...
Yeah.
dead mime, and people would take photos of me, and then I would scream at their children if they tried to kick me. But after 3 years of that, I moved over to magic professionally. Mm-hmm.
You know, something with actual skill.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then
sounds like effort to me.
Yeah. And then I've been doing that ever since, and now I have a, you know, I perform down in Las Vegas, which is where I currently reside. I'm back up in Minnesota for the Renaissance Festival.
Because you can't stay away.
Yeah, I know, even though I occasionally try. But I'm based in Las Vegas now, and I perform there for the rest of the year and travel around the country.
What kind of shows do you do in Las Vegas?
So I primarily do two types of shows. I do my street busking show down on Fremont Street, which is the old part of Vegas. Mm-hmm. So not where the giant pyramid and, you know, the water fountains is. I'm over by where the waving cowboy and the kicking cowgirl are.
Ooh. All the classy stuff.
Yep. And they've turned that
in the Rat Pack videos.
Yep, absolutely. But they've turned it all into this giant walkway. Mm-hmm. And so I do street shows for, you know, 150, 200 people, huge crowds, you know, full music. And I do a rope escape out there. And then I also work at a nightclub called The Wonderground, which is a magic nightclub. And we do a 3 hour evening, 3 1-hour shows. Okay. And I perform magic there. And I also stage manage there when I'm not performing. Okay. Okay. So I do stage managing at this nightclub, and then I also about once every other show I perform, and I'm working on new materials and stage sets, and then occasionally I travel. I'm flown around the country to do you know, evening shows and
so
stuff like that.
Do you do staged pieces, or are you also doing close up magic when you're
doing
those?
Both. Okay. I do both. They have two stage slots, and then they also have a close-up strolling. So out amongst this nightclub where they serve food and that and drinks, there's, I'd say, about 10 magicians who just stroll around
so
doing magic.
It's kind of
similar. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. My God. I'm just picturing this. Like, I'm sitting at a table, and, like, this one magician comes by, does a thing, leaves, and then another one comes.
Absolutely. That's exactly it.
So it's kind of like how they have the magic castle structured.
Kind of. I've also been.
Don't shoebox him.
I've also done the Magic Castle. I've performed at the Magic Castle before, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be back this January.
The way I understand it is they have a few stages, and then they have just kind of lobby magicians who wander around.
Kind of.
Do I have that wrong?
Pretty close. How the Magic Castle works is that there are several stage venues, mm-hmm. And then there are a couple bars where they bring in magicians from around the country.
Kind of guesting.
Guesting, and you perform at the Magic Castle for a week. And then anybody who is a certified member of the Magic Castle, and you can tell because they have a specific little pin, mm-hmm. Can also perform magic in the Magic Castle. However, if you are not a certified member, you are politely asked if you do know magic not to perform, because they have a certain caliber that they require to perform at the castle.
Okay.
But I performed for at the castle for the first time this last year, actually, as part of...
Does that mean you're a member?
No, I was brought in special. So I was with I was
so
there.
He's the guy that's so good. The Magic Castle brings him in.
Yeah. Well, I work at a magic school based in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And they hired the entire school, and I was part of the performance.
Is that what pulled you to Vegas in the first place?
Yeah, it was a big part of what pulled me to Vegas. I currently work at a magic school based in Vegas called McBride's Magic and Mystery School.
Okay.
And I kind of TA at this school, and I work directly underneath the owner-operator of the school. So I'm his personal apprentice.
Question. Okay, yeah. Okay. So let's say I enroll as a student in the school.
Mm-hmm.
What do I expect? What can I expect? What'll happen?
So depending upon what program that you go to, we do like a one-day, you know, focus class, a 3-day or a 7-day intensive training.
Okay.
And what happens is you have an option. If you already know magic, you can come in and perform your show. And it's kind of like a practicum where all these top magic teachers from around the country observe the act that you're working on.
They judge you.
And yeah, mm-hmm. kind of in a kind sort of way. Okay. They look at the set and they say, all right, this is what works. This is what works here. This is what is absolutely not working. And they're trying to kind of level you up as a performer.
Nice.
So some of the specific things I can't talk about a lot of the stuff, but some of the simple things is understanding how to take a bow, like which a lot of magicians don't realize that entering in and at the end of your show, how to bow properly without kind of coming off as a jackass.
I see.
Is
so
a big part of it.
So it's not just about the magic, but the performance as a whole.
And not only the performance, but the business of being an entertainer.
Oh, even the business. Awesome.
Absolutely. So,
oh my God, is there a magician accounting class?
Accounting. There is a marketing magician class, actually. Okay. So specifically...
But they don't get into, like, the business
how does
books.
How to sell yourself and how to make a okay. promo...
Yep, how to make a promo video selling yourself, as
how
well
to
as...
merchandise correctly.
Right, but it goes into a little bit about the accounting. Like, it's like one of the things is if you meet with other magicians and chat about magic, technically because we're all independent contractors as magicians, those are business expenses.
Right, yeah.
Because we're also actors, anytime that you get a haircut is technically a business expense. Any costuming that you purchase.
That I wasn't aware of.
I have a Justin Link dye job that is totally going on my taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew...
But the more stuff like that you put on, the closer the IRS looks at you. They're like, $65 for a haircut.
I know Porter, friend of the show Porter, would, whenever he would go and visit Matt, he would bring his vilification tennis book. And he would walk in... read a joke and go, well, okay, this is a business meeting now. And then he would close the book and sit down and that was mileage.
Right.
That he would write off.
Yeah. I mean, the more you get into that funky tax stuff,
of course.
Yeah.
So whatever magic level you currently are at, what's great about this is, there is a library at this school, which is about twice the size of this, room that we're recording in.
So okay. 40 foot square?
Yeah, I would say about 40 foot square, and it's floor to ceiling books on magic.
Awesome.
And the person who runs the school, who is my mentor, has read every single one of the books because this is his personal library.
It just came in my pocket.
Right. So he's read all of these books on magic. So what's amazing about this is you can go to him with any particular magic routine or technique that you have.
Not only read, but internalized.
Right. And he is able to say, all right, well, that works, but here's something better. Or this is where this came from. And then it turned into this and this, 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 and this is the best version of it currently out on the market. Because that's all that he does with his life. His name is Jeff McBride. And he is a library of information. And so
literally a library.
So you could go there not knowing any magic whatsoever and say, I want to be able to walk out of this class with a show. And he's like, all right, you know, we will give you a beginning piece, a middle piece, and an end piece. And by the end of the 3 days, you will be able to walk away and perform this three trick show and be competent at it.
Nice.
And that's
and again,
what we do.
Also doing the whole gamut from close up to stage to set piece to,
right.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, we have specific classes for some of those things. Like, it's
people
difficult.
People who want to specialize in cards or coins. Or
right. We'll go to a card or coin class. Just recently we had stage illusion class.
Go to a coin class. That just sounds fantastic.
Oh, no. It's great. It's great stuff. Yeah. Some of the coin workers are really, like, dedicated to their particular magic craft.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. So I teach there on a regular base. And, you know, one of the reasons why I went out to Vegas is that it's kind of the Hollywood for magicians, mm-hmm. to be perfectly honest.
Oh, yeah.
All magicians will eventually find their way kind of to Las Vegas. You know, same with stage actors with Broadway. And this school is one of three schools around the world.
Wow.
There's one in the U.S., which is the one I work at. There's one in Spain, which is the Tamaraz School. And there's one in, I believe it's either Korea, the Korean school. And the Koreans are all about card manipulation, so making cards appear out of thin air. And they completely...
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Oh my
God,
right?
They're so good at it. But here's the funny thing. So all of them originally learned from my mentor, Jeff McBride's DVDs on how to do card manipulation.
Nice.
He was the first one who created video footage for the training of magicians. And over in Korea, it was so popular and it kept on being torrented. So all the Koreans really liked learning this card magic because you didn't have to speak English. You could just watch what he was doing and figure it out. And so they just took it and just ran with it, and now there's these Korean manipulators who do suddenly.
Could you
things.
Imagine being the person that started that and then just like watching it take off and being like, "The fuck did I do?"
suddenly my copy of Bobo's doesn't seem as impressive.
Mm. Bobo's is such a good book, man. It's
such an amazing book, but that's the one book I
like to have. One book on magic, Bobo's Coin Magic, is such
a
good
book.
It's
the Bible. It absolutely is.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great. I didn't know you had Bobo's Coin Magic.
Oh, yeah, of course. I worked in a magic shop.
No, my levels of respect for your knowledge of magic.
Well, no. Let's not go too far. don't say things you're going to regret later.
No. But, I mean, you can learn pretty much anything that you need for coin magic from Bobo's.
I had a summer job in one of the magic shops.
No, I'm going to ask you guys to pause, at least for the listeners, if not me.
All right.
Is Bobo's?
So Bobo was a coin worker.
Okay.
And he wrote a book, I'd say, I don't know, what, about 4 inches tall, 6 inches tall?
Maybe three.
So anyway. The guys are exaggerating. It's about 3 inches.
Yeah, it's about
3 inches. Yeah, well, you know, we're guys. It's a thing that we do.
Yeah.
But it's a hefty book, and it is pretty much everything that you would need to learn.
It's just coin magic.
Coin magic.
Like, the whole fucking huge book is nothing but coin magic.
Is it pictures, words?
There are pictures. There are pictures, words. 70s pictures.
Oh, yeah, it's totally
70s. Oh, yeah.
Now, not as dirty as you think, though some of the magic books are that way as well.
It's true, but a lot of the... Just based on the time frame when this was, they're talking about, you know, making coins. I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. I apologize.
What? Are you going to do the coin behind the ear trick?
No, but pen behind the ear. But they're talking about catching the, you know, making the coin disappear and catching it in the hem. In the cuff of your pants.
The pants cuff. Because back then, you would fold it up and kind of have that cuff there.
Pants had that hand, but, sure. And nobody wears that anymore.
No. I do, but that's because I'm short.
Fair enough. But, you know, men's formal pants used to have that cuff at the bottom.
Right.
And so, you know, just some of the tricks in there, and that's just one example.
Right.
You know, various shirt pieces and clothing pieces that people just don't wear anymore are working, and so some of it is
the
in that
French
way. In some of that, right. in many ways, is dated, but that's probably 5% of the book.
Right.
The rest of it is you know, just all of these really cool misdirections and ways of palming the coins and stuff like that. And yeah, Bobo's is for anybody who wants to do coin magic, the place to start.
Yeah, it's a good place to start. I mean, if you're willing to read the book, I mean, that's what it requires. I mean, because when you're reading a book on magic versus watching a video on it, it requires a little bit more thinking. But that is neither here nor there.
We got sidetracked.
Yeah, we got sidetracked.
I just wanted to know. You guys were
absolutely sorry. I will admit when I asked Will to be on the show, I was like, I get to talk about things I'm interested in for once.
we need to get Matt back.
Ah, fuck you. Fuck you and the horse you rode in on.
I drove a car.
All the horsepower that you rode in on.
Okay, that's fair.
So how long have you always been a magic person, or was this something that you kind of stumbled in on halfway through being a mime and just found out you were really good at it, or
where
did that impetus happen?
A little bit of both. So my father actually was a magician on the side when I was young. So when I was, you know, 6 years old, I first started helping him out with his magic show, carrying props and things like that. And then when I became a teenager, I was like, screw magic, I hate it.
Fuck you guys.
Right.
I'm going to do something cool.
And started studying psychology.
I'm going to be a mime.
Yeah, I'm going to. That's a real art form. Yeah. So I started studying psychology and then eventually moved over to theater. And I studied musical theater performance in New York City. And then just kind of by happenstance, magic totally saved my ass in New York City. Story time. So,
yeah.
Story time with Will Bradshaw. So, it was my first year in New York City. I was living out there, and it was around Christmas time, and I was going out Christmas shopping for my family, and I was wandering around, and I went to into this shop looking for stuff, and as I walked into this shop, this woman, like, as I was walking in, like, shoulder checked me pretty hard. And, you know, being a Minnesotan, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. And she just, you know, completely ignored me and kept on walking out. And I'm like, well, that's kind of rude, but we're in New York, so whatever. And so I continue.
You got your pocket picked, didn't you?
I totally got my pocket picked in the middle of New York. And she was long gone by there.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, I was down in Soho, which is below 42nd Street, about 20 blocks further south than 42nd Street, I think I was. And at the time, I was living at 85th. So I had, like, a long fucking walk.
Yeah.
And it's the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Right? In New York, so it's pretty cold. I was, you know, thick-blooded Minnesotan, so I could handle that. But I had already been out walking for several hours. Mm-hmm. But at that point, I was kind of carrying some of the magic props that I used to use on a regular base, these sponge balls that I would perform out at the Renaissance Festival. And so I make it from about 20th Street to 66th.
Oh, good Lord.
Which is where Juilliard is. Where the Opera House is. And I get to the Opera House and I'm just done. Like, I can't go any further, and I have no money, so I can't get a bus ticket to get the rest of the way, even though there's a bus stop there. And I'm walking along, and there's this family kind of sitting there, you know, doing their thing. And I'm like, you know what? I'm in a bad mood. I'm going to do some magic because it's something which makes me happy.
Sure.
And there's these kids here. So I do magic for these people and, you know, and completely blow their minds out of the water. And they're like, what are you doing here? You know, are you, you know, entertainer? I'm like, I got my pocket picked while I was down at 20th Street, and I'm just walking back home right now. And they look at each other and reach into the wallet and pull out $6 and give me the $6 and say, hope this should be enough to, you know, get
cab fare, yeah.
Oh. Right, the bus, well, yeah, or subway fare, and, you know, a couple subway fares. And so I ended up getting a chance to subway my way all the way back up to my apartment. And that was the first time I ever did street busking.
Oh my God.
Like, holy crap, this is something
You, like, tripped and fell onto it.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It's a good fucking story.
Right.
Damn. This needs to be on the fucking cover of your book, man.
Right, you know. So that's kind of how I got started, you know, on this road of street busking. Because before that, out at the Renaissance Festival, I had only done pantomime.
Mm-hmm.
I had never done magic. And magic for me was kind of something that I occasionally did with this pantomime character. Like, if I saw a child who was just losing their crap because they were overheated or miserable, you've come across them before. And, you know, I would come up in this pantomime kind of clowny character, and I would do this magic for the kids, and it was about a minute's worth of magic, and 98% of the time I could take a child who was completely way beyond their comfort level and make them start laughing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, made so many families really, really happy with that as this pantomime character. But you know, I never saw the magic as being something viable on its own.
I want to hear that you consistently did coin tricks to make the children happy, because
yeah,
I do coin tricks too to make the kids happy.
Oh yeah.
It's usually shaking my butt. Mm-hmm. Belly dancer. Okay,
no, I'm really like the whole making kids happy thing.
Yeah,
and this is going to sound really weird.
Yeah,
but I understand where you're coming from because it totally got me laid.
Oh, right. Oh.
What?
Uh-huh.
I mean, congratulations.
It was when I was still working.
I'm not entirely certain I believe that you got laid.
It was when I was still working.
Well, he has two kids.
That's suspect.
It was when I was working at the magic
Raiderly
shop.
Raiderly has two kids.
I went to college in St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living in the Twin Cities at that time, and some friends of mine still going to college in St. Peter invited me down to come down because they were in the juggling club. And the juggling club had been asked to do this citywide fun thing.
Right.
And so I came down and we were juggling, and I saw this one kid that was just looked like the world had fallen. And I found out later, and this is going to sound like a fucking story, but I found out later that his dog had died.
Oh, God.
And he was just miserable as hell, and this brought him to this festival to try to cheer him up. And so I did, you're probably familiar, the pen through the dollar bill.
Absolutely, yeah.
Gaffed pen thing. And I did...
Secrets.
See, okay, secrets. I stabbed a...
You're so bad at this.
I know. Stabbed a pen through a dollar bill and pulled the pen honestly, out. The dollar bill was completely okay. And
I didn't even understand what you said. Well, so that's you're okay. Probably
but
anyway, fine.
So I did this trick where I stab a pen through a dollar bill and then I pull the pen out and the dollar bill's fine. And then I give him the dollar bill and I tell him that this is a very special dollar bill and you know, you're going to tell other people that you saw me stab a pen through this and they're probably not going to believe it, but we saw it. And, you know, and he skipped away and just had this great time. And, like I said, later his mom came by and was like, "Did you give him this dollar?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's cool." And she told me the whole story. But anyway, there were some girls that were working like this. I don't even know what it was anymore. This game that was basically boring. But I made this
throw
this
the
kid,
dart, hit the balloon.
Exactly. Yeah. And I made this kid who was just miserable skip away happy, and I turn around and all three of them are staring at me like that was the... yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, all of them dropped eggs.
Oh,
like,
my
all at once.
God,
they're
did
like,
they ever. Yep.
Boom. You could hear the sound of one omelet being made. It was incredible.
So,
why does that gross boy sound so
No. Oh, it's just a turn. No.
It made me hungry. I'm hungry for omelet. I haven't eaten yet. Anyway, so you're doing magic at the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah.
And then you apply for this job, or how did you find out about this job in Vegas?
So, yet again, an interesting story with this.
I love interesting stories.
Yeah, so...
good questions. Fuck you, Matt.
Yeah, piss off.
Nobody so, With how I got connected with this school in Las Vegas is I finished my training in New York City, and I realized that living in New York City was a horrific thing because there's a lot of people there, but it's exceptionally lonely, and I hated it. So I decided to leave and move back to Minnesota to pursue my acting career, which ended up turning into working at a Don Pablo's. And so here I was.
Sounds
I went.
About right, yeah.
I went from being a, you know, working as a performer in New York City to, you know, a waiter in Don Pablo's and all this crap. And I'm like, man, this isn't really working out for me. And about a year ago beforehand, my parents had gotten me in contact with this magic school when I was still a mime and sent me to one of these classes, which was rocky, we'll say. They were not terribly appreciative of some of the magic and how I did it. I think I went to the dean.
Your constructive criticism was less constructive than
well, one of the interesting things, one of the things that they told me to do, and I regret it to this day, is who is my now mentor, when I was doing the Spongeballs, he said, "You need to grab a squeaker and do it all in a squeaker voice." And this was 2 years before Butch Roy came out with and doing the squeaker. And 2 years before that, my mentor told me, that I should be a mime and speak with a squeaker. And I didn't do it. And then Butch Roy came around and created a sensation with that. And you know what? He was funnier than I probably ever could have been with that squeaker. But to this day, I'm like, son of a bitch. Could have been mine. But I would have still been a mime as opposed to a magician. But so I ended up reaching out to him. You know, because I was in this kind of funky space, and I
not
went
like the funky chicken.
Not like the funky chicken, but you know, my life wasn't kind of going together in the ways that I wanted to.
Right.
And he had, you know, kind of like a Renaissance Festival art retreat that he does out in the desert, in Las Vegas, and he invited me to go to this kind of artist retreat.
The look on Salsa's face right now, listeners,
like
it's
so.
Tell me more.
It's a 3 day retreat out in a place called the Valley of Fire out in Las Vegas.
I like fire.
And what we do out there is kind of entertainers and magicians and storytellers. We get together for the 3 days, and it's kind of the goal is to get you outside of your day to day routines, to get you to practice playing with other people and co-create with them. So there's drummers and storytellers and magicians and pantomimes and fire performers.
Full gamut, really.
Right. And so one of the things that we do with it is to shift how we're used to working is that we shift our sleeping schedule so we sleep during the day and are creating during the evening to help shift us from one mindset to another. And so, break the cycle. So we light a fire and people tell stories and co-create, so there's a lot of dancers there and drummers and fire performers. So they work on co-creating this.
Sounds like a lot of brainstorming and yes and.
Yes, a lot of brainstorming, a lot of yes ands going on. And, so he invited me to come out to this. And I went to this event, and while I was out there, I'm like, I want to apprentice underneath this person. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask him. So while there, I went, at an opportune moment, I went to him and I'm like, Jeff, I would really like to be your apprentice. And he kind of looked at me and he said, no. Just straight up, no.
Right.
Yep. Like, no. And I was a little discouraged, but he went to me and he's like, well, but there is a tradition in the magic community where a potential apprentice has to, ask like three times before he's accepted. Yeah. Kind of like the martial artist, going to the master.
You've got to sit outside their front door no matter how many times they say no.
Blah, right, and blah, keep on doing it. So I was like, all right, this is how I'm going to do it. And, and I think I went 4 years practicing the magic, trying to make myself worthy to be his apprentice. And then I realized part of the reason why you're an apprentice is because you want to work with him.
Right.
Because if you can do it on your own, you don't need a mentor. Right. So I went and asked him again. And let me tell you, going into a situation when you know the answer is going to be no, but you need to ask with full desire to get that yes is one of the weirdest and most difficult things to do. So it's like going up to a girl and asking her out, and you already know 100% she's going to say no to you, but you have to ask her out anyways, and you have to mean it for possibly that, a time later on. And it's a weird juxtaposition. So he says no again, but at this point he starts asking me to do, work for him, some odd and end jobs around the school. So now all of a sudden, I'm doing some paperwork and I'm helping with emails and I'm doing not necessarily magic related stuff.
Gathering firewood and waxing the car.
Right, precisely. And then about a year and a half later, I ask him a third time and he says yes. And then I started working more and more at this school. And now I teach classes at this school, and I've been invited to talk at conferences, and I'm his opening act as well when he brings an opening act. Nice. So this last year, he flew me out to Ithaca, New York, to open his evening show that he was doing.
Pause. I want to just revel in the phrase, flew me out to Ithaca. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah. So, but it was very much like that Kung Fu master, going and asking several times. And now I have full access to his magic library.
I just came again.
God damn it, you're going to need to change.
I like books, fuck you.
And he also lets me rent out books. So I have a library card of books and props and pretty much anything that I'm looking for access to, he'll find a way to put that together for me and, co-create that.
And again, it sounds like it's very much a full, it's not just this is how you do magic tricks and make them better, it's how to perform them and how to develop your own and how
and,
to
well, mm-hmm.
beat the business and how to market yourself.
Yeah. Capture an audience. It's not just, do a good job performing, but to grab them and to work with them.
Right, and be entertaining and, have them actually care.
Very much a
yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of magic, a lot of magic people, when they're watching it, it feels like, at least when I've come across it, at least when I was younger, that people didn't care, especially like the uncle who's doing kind of the cheap party tricks. And that's a lot of people's first introduction to magic as an art form. And so they judge a lot of future performances off of a bad experience. And so what we try and do is teach people to give an audience a good first experience, so they're not, expecting this hokey kind of bad magic, halfway bad magic,
plastic something that with, with no patter.
Right, precisely.
And you drop something, they're
Right, precisely. Yeah. So, that's a lot of the work that we end up doing. And we also teach people of all age ranges. So there's a lot of retirees who are coming back to magic and wanting to do magic again. So, yeah.
So do you do also magic. Like, I know some other performers, like theater and improv, do classes for not necessarily theater and improv people.
Right.
Like, they'll
everyday
do...
Everyday improv.
Yeah, they'll do improv for corporations so the people that work there can mm-hmm. kind of break out of assuming things and kind of, you know...
Yeah.
Do you do, quote-unquote, magic classes for people who aren't necessarily interested in magic, but more what they can learn from the lessons
absolutely
their life they're in?
We have several classes similar to that. We have a class which is called Magic and Medicine. So it is magic specifically designed for medical practitioners. So for doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, psychologists, people who are okay. in the healing art forms. There's also magic and martial arts, which combines there's a martial art teacher and magician who comes in there. There's magic for street.
No, I want to know more about this.
Yeah,
sorry,
I assume that has a lot of misdirection in it and stuff like that.
Right.
Focus.
There's a lot of misdirection. There's a lot of focus there. And there's some, like, of the body tricks there. So, like, for instance, one of the pieces that I know from that class is where I can have a line of people, like 20 people land and stand back to... have their hands on the shoulders and everybody pushing as hard as they can against me. And so there's 20 of them and one of me, and they cannot budge me or move me whatsoever. And that's a piece of magic that I've learned from, you know, magic and martial arts. And, you know,
nice.
Light as a feather, you know, stiff as a board.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, being okay. able to combine a lot of stage presentation as well with that. And, you know, there's a lot of work with Tai Chi and using Tai Chi as a mode to practice having a magician float something, because there's a very specific mm-hmm. movement style okay. when you're doing Tai Chi, which directly translates over to when you're
yeah.
floating something
yeah.
and you want these objects that you're floating to float around like it's almost Tai Chi in water.
Yeah.
So studying that motion and being able to move that into your body informs
cool.
how you right. do these types of illusions.
Seriously, Salsa, go get some pants.
I know, right? No, I'm having the time of my life.
Oh, that's right. So okay. that's magic and martial arts, and we do magic and medicine. We have magic for street performers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Magic for speakers and presenters.
Ooh,
so people who do, let's say, a lecture, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
and they're paid large amounts of money to lecture in front of Apple on the newest
right.
whatever.
TED Talk.
Right, the newest TED Talk, and how to incorporate magic into your already existing lecture to prevent people from falling asleep in the
yeah,
middle
yeah,
of
yeah.
it.
Keep them engaged. Yeah.
Right, because when you're talking, you know, really high or existential or really numbery type stuff, people
mm-hmm.
can fall asleep.
Oh, yeah.
So we teach, you know, performance art form, and specifically magic as a performance art form. And this is one of the lectures that I teach at this school, and I can talk a little bit about this, which is the lecture that I talk on is magic inherently is a status art form. And what I mean by that is when you perform magic for somebody, you're equivalently saying, I know something or can do something or understand something which you do not know, cannot understand, or cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you get into that relationship with another person, you, whether you want to or not, have pulled status over them.
Sure.
Look what I can do, which you can't do, basically, in the most juvenile form.
Yeah.
And so when you get into that relationship with another person, now all of a sudden there's a different dynamic between you and them and how to work with that dynamic. Similar thing kind of happens. You're studying sword swallowing.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of that happens as well, but mm-hmm. because there's a little bit of a mystery of how exactly sword swallowing can work, and people can't quite do that. So there's a little bit of, you know, demonstrating an ability that other people can't do,
mm-hmm.
which is part of what makes it an interesting performance style, same a little bit with juggling. And so how we can either use that to our advantage or how it can be disastrous, because a lot of times when magicians do that, it's all about look what I can do, pushing other people down. And so
right.
I go in on these classes and I talk about this particular psychological, you know, phenomenon. So,
kind of like you have this privilege, you're inviting people up to it, kind of a thing?
A little bit. Like, okay. One of the things that I talk about is how to train your magic or have your magic put together where if people just sit down and enjoy the magic, you raise their status in front of their friends. Because a lot of the time, and just to get into... and. We don't have to talk more about this.
Oh, no,
this,
I want to. Okay. I want to because I'm following you, and I
perfect. Okay,
I have an analog actually. One of the things I do a lot of comedy, mm-hmm. As people know. I do a class every year at Mondo Jungle Fest.
Marks.
Every year at Mondo, Dave Walbridge, mm-hmm. who some of us know, teaches a comedy class, and one of the things he always talks about is status,
mm-hmm.
And one of the things he says is the quickest way to create comedy is flipping status. You know, you have...
Yeah.
He's an older guy, and when he does shows for kids, he has high status and they have low status.
Yep.
And he always flips that by making them smarter than him.
Yep.
And by flipping status, and by focusing on who has high status and flipping that on its head, you can create comedy.
Yep.
So when you start talking about status, I was immediately like, I know what you're talking yep. about.
Now you have Except to be careful by putting yourself lower.
Instead of using it as a comedy thing,
yep.
maintaining the status quo,
yep.
but not abusing the status quo.
Absolutely. You have to be careful by flipping the status because whoever has the highest status can control what's going on.
Absolutely.
So when you're dealing especially with children, if you give them more status than you, then they can completely run amok with the show.
They're absolutely in control. And
get you into
that's a lot
weird
of comedy, but that's basically what clowning is.
It can be,
whereas,
yeah.
Whereas, and if I'm following you correctly, what I do in my show is I try to educate people on exactly how I do what I do.
Yeah.
So it's, I still have high status, but I'm trying to elevate them up.
Absolutely.
Closer to my level. I say,
absolutely.
You know, I say, that, you know, here's a little bit of biology on how this is working, and this mm-hmm. is what I need to do in order to do this, and this is how dangerous this is, because this is what I am doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like I'm elevating their status. I'm still maintaining higher status.
Yep, because you can actually do it. Yep, okay. Absolutely. And so now one of
I'm learning stuff. I'm so right. happy.
So oh, now, oh now to continue on with this, which is an interesting thing, and I love talking about this. I talk about
obviously,
it all the time.
And we this could go on forever, but we're probably going to have to cut you off at some.
That's
point.
Okay. That's okay. One of the interesting things as street performers, because both of us are street performers as well, one of the ways that I use this status to my advantage, and I talk about this in the street busking, is. So I raise myself as status because I can do these things. And then I specifically find people who are the alpha males who are watching my show, right? Now, the alpha males very often will try and challenge that status because they want to have that high status. That's mm-hmm. kind of sure. what they do. And I'm good at my craft, so they're not going to beat me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not... doesn't happen very often. Once in a blue moon, if they've come across magic and know some magic ahead of time,
right.
they can keep up with me. But I have some aces in my holes, which are specifically designed. Aha! Magician aces in the hole. Specifically, my butthole. Yeah. No,
anyway, you were
that
saying.
Are specifically designed to fool these people.
Right.
And so now, just on the street performing side of things, I've created this status disparity. Disparity?
Google it. Anyway.
Yeah. I have knocked the person who is normally the alpha male down to a lower position. Discrepancy. Status
okay.
discrepancy. Because now I suddenly have high status and they don't.
We have beaten the scotch.
Uh-huh. So these alpha males need to have the alpha status in front of their friends. Now, there are other ways that you can gain status in front of your when you're doing these competitions, and the way that I try and lean them is financially, because a lot of these alpha males are also very, very well off.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So now what happens is they need to claim the alpha status back. So the way that they can do that is flaunting money around. So this is where it comes into the street busker. So now I try and maintain a high financial status as well, so it doesn't look like I need the money. And I fooled them, so it requires them to throw bigger bills into my hat to regain that alpha status in front of their friends, because they don't actually care about the status between me and them. What they care about is their perceived status in front of their friends. Oh. So I find an alpha male who is in front of like the beta and several other people, and if they challenge me to a status contest, most magicians will be like, don't go there because you're going to get into a pissing contest with somebody. I'm like, no.
Or you throw them a bone.
Right. Or you throw them, right. So what happens is I go along this, and then it's built into their, you know, psychology. So they need to gain that status back. And so a lot of the time I'll get, you know, $20. I've even gotten a $100 tip from a guy because of these principles with the status.
Nice.
And this is where kind of my psychology background and my performance and magic background create a, you know, horrific Frankenstein monster of, you know,
I think I may be
manipulating people.
I think I may be inadvertently doing this already, and we'll talk about that later. Mm. But I do have one. We should probably take a break here and then get the hell out of here. But I do have one more question concerning magic.
Yeah.
Now, are you philosophically? Do you like pure magic or
dirty?
Do you want a clean deck of cards and an actual real coin, or what do you think about gaffed?
I think
trick
that
coins. You know,
it depends on what your final outcome is going to be.
Okay.
So
you're okay with using scotch and soda,
absolutely,
as opposed to real coins.
Yeah.
If you're going to get a good
deck. The nice thing about using real coins and real decks is that you don't have to carry around 50 pounds of gear.
Absolutely.
So being able to do that, and also yet again with this status thing, between magicians, it gets a little bit more complicated with this status thing. So being able to do magic with regular props is helpful too. But what it comes down to for me as a performer, I'm a performer first and then a magician. So I'm absolutely willing to work with, you know, things which I've prepared ahead of time. And a lot of magic is really preparation to be able to create a stronger experience for somebody so they can have a better time. Mm-hmm. And if I can find the way to give them the best time that I possibly can as an entertainer, then I feel that I've done my job right. And if it's about using normal props, then it's a thing about ego a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, I'm a purist.
Right.
Which there's a time and place for that, but that's a little bit more, I personally feel, for magicians versus magicians.
I was about to say, at the Magic Con.
Oh yeah!
You guys all hang out.
Oh yeah!
And you
I just came from Magic Live, where there was a whole lot of that going on.
Yeah.
And you absolutely need to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as the end result being people are happy, who cares if you're using a gimmick?
Right. Precisely. Okay. And there's something to be said about being able to walk into a situation completely unprepared and being able to do something impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And having that skill set is important, but I'm not a purist by any extent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. This conversation has gone on for much too short a time. I can seriously.
And are we even going to do a third segment?
Yeah. We're gonna take a really quick break, and then we're gonna get the hell out of here. But God, I could.
We'll talk after the podcast.
Wait, I have
as
one
well.
Question for
sure,
you. And
go ahead.
This will help get Salsa's Roxton. calm. It's like a cold shower for you.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a story first and then the question.
Yeah.
So, very quickly, when I went in to have my first, oral surgery done, mm-hmm. active wisdom teeth, the oral surgeon, instead of, asking me to count backwards from 100 or whatever, is they're putting me under, asked me if I had any interesting hobbies.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I do fire manipulation. He's like, and eating and breathing? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you know, fuel's really bad for your teeth, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, I never thought about that, but yeah, okay, cool. And then he starts telling me about a street performers convention gathering thing in the Keys.
Okay.
My question is, have you ever heard of this?
I mean, I'm certain that there is a street performer convention down in...
You don't know about it.
I've never personally been to it, but I would be able to call somebody immediately off of my phone list and give me
15 different people, and nobody's heard about this street performers convention in the Keys.
I mean, I would imagine instead of a convention, because street performers don't really do conventions, it would be more like a festival. Like there would be a street performer festival, kind of like, what is it? There's a big festival in the UK where street performers go to, and I'll try and remember it by the time that the third set comes by.
Please tell us, because I'm super interested. But we're going to take a break now, and then we're going to close and do our outro and all that other nonsense, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Perfect.
Sweet.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter, at AON Podcast. Or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for apropos of nothing.
I mean, you guys can keep talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I'm Salsa.
Woo. I'm Jenna.
And I'm still Will.
And we are going to get the fuck out of here after we do
get
a couple things.
Get the hell out of Dodge.
Number one, thank you so very much for listening to the show, because it's awesome.
You're assuming people are listening.
That's also true. But if people aren't listening, that means they're probably sleeping, right?
Mm.
Because, I mean,
you know this isn't live, right? Like, we record it, and then we push
it up
later.
The fuck up, people. And you know what really wakes you up? Caffeine.
Oh, my God.
My segs are terrible.
Wow, that was awful.
No, I give you a 7 out of 10 on that.
No, that was like a 3, seriously.
It was, it's not as classy as what we normally
You know
have.
What really
this
the problem
is? This
is
what happens when you fire Matt.
No, what the problem is festival is going on, and I am seriously, my brain is not functioning correctly because I am operating on lack of sleep. So what I really need is a good bottle of cold press from True Stone Coffee Roasters.
Oh my God, that's the best cold press.
In fact, I just got 2 bottles today.
Yay. Score.
Because I haven't been hoarding them all lately.
I know, right? Seriously.
Yeah, the problem is that they get delivered to my place.
She doles them out when she sees fit.
Well, I try to keep it even thirds, but honestly, I've been kind of hoarding the cold press a little bit. It's really good.
No, it's fucking great. I love it, and you should love it too by going to TrueStoneCoffeeRoasters.com or something like that, whatever it is, and getting yourself some True Stone coffee. Because it's delicious, and we wouldn't be saying that if we didn't actually fucking believe it, because it's good.
I mean, not only are they a sponsor, but we're also a member. Is that how that works? I don't know. But if you go to TrueStoneRoasters.com and order your coffee.
TrueStoneCoffee.com.
TrueStoneCoffee.com.
TrueStoneCoffee.com. And
if you go to TrueStoneCoffee.com and order some coffee, you can save money.
Not if. When.
When. Yes.
How would one go about saving money on that?
Well, there's a handy little coupon code that you can use. Salsa, do you happen to remember that little coupon code?
I do happen to know it off the top of my head. It happens to be apropos, or as Jenna would say,
apropos.
Because she doesn't know how French is pronounced.
I took 3 years of French, motherfucker.
Then why are you the one fucking saying it weird?
Because
we didn't think this
through. This is English. We're speaking English.
Dear
right
listeners,
now. I don't know if you knew that.
Dear listeners, what you should
do Petray knew that.
Is you should go to TrueStoneCoffee.com and you should use the promo code apropos, and you will get 10% off of your order of True Stone Coffee, whether it be full beans or ground beans or the lovely, wonderful cold press 12-ounce bottles. Or anything else in between, honestly.
And
it's all good.
And to reiterate, when you order from True Stone, they don't send you the beans that have been sitting on the shelf for 6 months. They roast it and send it to you the next day.
It's got a
it
date on it.
It is fresh roasted.
It's so good.
So, yeah, you're not getting shit. You're getting the good stuff fresh and ready to go.
And while you are all well and alert and awake and alive enthusiastic on coffee, you should do a Fast Five with us.
Fast Five!
Today's Fast Five comes to us from Matt.
You should explain how this Fast Five thing works.
So, Matt emailed this to me, so it's not actually from Matt. It's actually from CD Scotchbringer!
Yay!
So the Fast Five is, for those of you who are not familiar with it, and that probably includes our guest, Mr. Will Bradshaw.
Toad's
Fast, Fast Five. That Fast Five is you, the listener, send us in five questions. They have either one answer or the other, A or B, Coke or Pepsi, and we don't know what the context is, but you give us the answers first, and we have to choose one or the other without knowing why you're asking the question. And only after we have chosen, then we open up the second email and find out who is right and who is going to be seriously embarrassed about what they said earlier. So, the first question is, this comes for us again from CD Scotchbringer. And I don't, this is from 2012, so we are way backed up on this shit. I blame Matt. While, it's a good thing we got rid of that guy.
I know.
First question is, honey roasted or butter toffee?
Ooh, I'm going to go for buttered toffee.
I got to go honey roasted.
I'm going to say this has to do with nuts.
I think this is nuts, and I got to go honey roasted.
I think I would prefer honey roasted.
I'm still deep into the toffee, like butter toffee.
I like some sweet, but but in general, I prefer the
balls deep into the toffee.
Well, I mean,
Oh,
question number two: Heath or Score?
Gonna go with Heath again because Heath and toffee. You know, Heath is another form.
Which is your favorite Ledger?
Score Ledger?
Like, what? Like I know those are both candy bars, but what's really the difference between them? I don't need a lot of candy, so just one.
Well, isn't a Heath bar a toffee bar?
I believe
Score
it is.
Has nuts?
If it has nougat, I'm in. I'm going to go Score hoping it has nougat. I fucking love nougat. I would eat a bowl of just nougat.
Honestly, just
and not like one of those shallow bowls like you get at the fancy restaurants for your salad, whatever. No. I would like deep cereal bowl full of nougat.
Honestly, I'm going to go with Score just because of the name.
Mm.
Like Heath is kind of like Heath, and Score is like Score. Score is a Viking axe murderer name, and Heath is like French Heath.
Mm.
What do you have against the Canadians, yo?
They're health care system is superior to us. That's I have against them.
I can see you having a grudge about that. Yeah. Okay.
Question number three. Peanut butter or pretzel?
I'm allergic to peanut butter, so I'm going to go pretzel.
Oh, but I really like peanut butter.
I'm going to go for the peanut butter on myself right now.
Sophie's choice. Oh, I got to go. I'm going to go peanut butter. I really got to go peanut butter, I think. As much as I like pretzels, goddamn, peanut butter is tasty. Question number four, Snickers or Butterfinger?
Snickers.
Snickers all the way.
I'm going to have to go with Snickers as well. Like, if it was about 15 years ago, I would have gone for Butterfingers, but there's something about, I think the If You're Hungry, Grab a Snickers commercial, which has completely changed my mind on it.
Ooh, advertising has worked its way on you.
Oh, my God, I feel like such a plebe.
I have always preferred the Snickers. Again, I can't have them anymore. Fuck you. But, yeah.
I don't dislike the Butterfinger, but Snickers is just so good.
See, the thing, Butterfingers get stuck in my teeth.
I like caramel.
Yeah.
Caramel is a flavor that just really does it for me.
Right?
Yeah.
So, number five, Kit Kat or Wrigley's Double Mint Gum?
I'm going to have to go for the Kit Kat.
I think Kit Kat for me.
Yeah.
Huh. There's nothing better than a frozen Kit Kat bar.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Stick them in the freezer. It's amazing.
I want some chocolate.
I'm gonna go with the gum. I don't know why.
Just to be obstinate.
Pretty much obstinance, I think.
I mean, that's your prerogative.
I do like spearmint.
Mm. I'm more of a wintergreen fiend myself.
Sure. I actually just really like mint and all of its flavors and incarnations. Mm. I recently had.
How
some
much difference do the different mints have?
You'd be surprised. Get Altoid. Like, get two Altoid cans and get one regular red one and get a wintergreen.
I do mint so infrequently that I've never really had a side by side comparison.
Oh, we got to get you peppermint, wintermint, and spearmint.
Yeah,
and we'll
you can actually tell
side.
The difference.
You can tell the difference.
I believe you. I've just never done it.
Like, wintergreen is a little milder, I find. I like that. It's smoother.
It's opener.
Yeah. Feels like we're talking about scotch again all of a sudden. Yes, oh, the Wintergreen. Oh, it has an opener body
the,
to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the Extreme Tasting League Mint podcast will be coming to your next...
there will be three episodes.
All right. How about we get to some answers, shall we?
Oh, score. I like that.
Number one, honey roasted or butter toffee? I said honey roasted.
Butter toffee.
I said honey.
CDS said toffee as well. Let me see. What is the better snaking peanut?
Snacking.
Oh, better snacking peanut. Okay.
Snacking peanut. You were correct.
Wow,
it was a nut
who
question.
The hell?
He missed the
put
C.
Put you in charge.
He's the one who wrote this.
It is your
CDS,
podcast.
CDS doesn't know how to spell it. Yeah, fair enough.
Don't blame it on him. This is you, Salsa.
I gotta go honey roasted. I fucking love honey.
Yeah,
honey roasted. Is the perfect food as far as I'm concerned.
I'm still happy with my butter toffee.
And you're completely okay with that. And I honestly don't fault you at all. But yeah. Honey just does it for me.
I do, but again, only out of abstinence.
Mm. All right. Number two. Heath or Score? Score just sounds more Viking. And
I was on the
badass.
Heath for Ledger.
Which is R.I.P. the better chocolate-covered toffee bar?
Ah, see.
And oh. I don't know.
I don't...
I've only had Heath bar, so I wouldn't be able
I
to
get,
really...
I get chocolate bars so infrequently, and if I do, it's going to be...
I don't really toffee.
Something
like,
a little...
I've bad teeth. And the toffee just...
Oh, yeah, it sticks to it.
Oh, but on like a frappuccino, like a really like fruitsy coffee, like Heath on top of it. Oh, so good.
Huh. I mean, I believe you.
Oh, yeah.
I just...
It's a thing. Just saying.
Yeah, all right. are you good? Do you
oh, yeah.
A cigarette?
No.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
All right. Question number three. Peanut butter or pretzel?
I was on the peanut butter.
I said peanut butter. CDS. Oh, by the way, CDS said score on the previous one too. Yeah. CDS said peanut butter. Which is the better M&M?
Yeah,
the peanut butter or the pretzel?
There's a pretzel M&M.
There is a pretzel
M&M.
It's really, really good, but I still got to stick with peanut butter.
Yeah. I would assume the peanut butter would be better.
I prefer peanut over the peanut butter, like for the crunch.
Really?
Yeah, like there's something
because
really satisfying about the crunch.
I prefer crunchy peanut butter, but with the M&M, I like just the peanut M&M.
Yeah, no, that's
or,
what
I'm
saying.
Sorry, the peanut butter M&M over the peanut M&M. I don't know why.
No, I like that. I like the peanut.
That's your fancy.
That's true. Number four.
I'm sensing a theme with these questions.
Right?
Snickers or Butterfinger? I said Snickers.
Snickers.
We all said Snickers.
CDS said Butterfinger. Which has the better slogan? Ooh.
And see, I already answered mine straight up. I had been a Butterfinger type of kid when
so
I was
what,
a kid.
What is Butterfinger? Nobody better lay a finger on my Butterfinger.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Snickers is
hungry.
Hungry. Eat a Snickers.
Eat a Snickers, which I think is just brilliant marketing because
it really
tells you immediately what they want you to do. Hungry? Grab a Snicker. And the funny thing is there have been several times when I've been on a road trip and I was hungry and I'm like, boy, I'm hungry. And then the next thought was, I should grab a Snickers. So clearly it works.
It's working on
on a subconscious level.
Even though I prefer Snickers personally, I gotta say Butterfinger.
You're just thinking
slogan.
Of Bart.
I am.
Nobody better lay a finger on my
No, head. I absolutely am, because that's a brilliant marketing strategy.
Yeah, but it's like a 10-year-old marketing strategy. They haven't done it
in forever. This was written in 2012.
Oh, well. So 4 years, all right.
True, but I mean, does Butterfinger have a different one now?
I don't know.
Have you seen a Butterfinger commercial?
I don't watch a lot of TV, so
no. Are they still candy bars that exist?
They're still out there. Like,
but it rhymes. It has, you know, a patter to it. Mm. Whereas Hungry, I could also eat a steak, I guess. Again, I prefer Snickers, but I think as far as the better slogan, I gotta go with Butterfinger on this one.
I think
we'll agree to disagree.
Absolutely.
I think Salsa's is much more of a poetic.
Yeah.
Whereas yours is much more of a business marketing.
Yeah, business marketing practical. Yeah.
Fair enough.
If I was trying to sell something, I'd probably want the business marketing one. Yeah. But
make all the monies.
Make money.
Hey. Okay, number five. Kit Kat or Rickley's Spearmint Gum? I said Kit Kat.
Kit Kat.
We all said Kit Kat.
No, she said gum.
CDS also said the Double Mint Gum.
Oh.
Doublemint or can't get the cheesier musical commercial from the 80s.
Oh my god, that's totally Wrigley's.
Before my time.
So the Wrigley's was Doublemint, Doublemint, gum, right?
Yeah.
And what was the Kit Kat one?
Give me a break. Give me a break.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Give me a break of that Kit Kat.
The cheesier one has got to be Kit Kat, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
No, well, double your pleasure, double your fun. It's the statement of the great mint of double.
No, you're right. No, you're right. I'm sold.
Because they had all the twins.
Cheesier is double. Cheesier. Yeah, where Kit Kat is still going strong.
How do I know this better than you guys? Like, because I wasn't even alive during that time.
Because I have a life.
Yeah, it was the 80s.
What year were you born, Will?
I was born in 87. So, like, the 80s were... You know, baby time for me.
Anyway, moving on. That was our Fast Five. Thank you so very much to Celia Scotchbringer for writing that 4 years ago. If you have a Fast Five, we promise it won't take 4 years to get around to it. And by that,
For those that are still in the back.
We still have some of back queue, but I don't exactly know how long that back queue is. Only Matt knows that, and Matt is not here to enlighten us, and he probably doesn't know himself. But if you have a Fast Five, the best format is to send an email to matt@aonpodcast.com. One email should have the answers, and the second should please contain both the answers and the questions so Matt doesn't have to go back and forth like a moron. And then we will eventually get around to reading it. If you are a new submitter, we try to put those near the front. If you're somebody who has done a lot of these, then we will hold on to it for a little bit longer and eventually 4 years later get around to it.
Hey, quick, listeners, if you've sent something and haven't heard from us, heard back from us on it, maybe leave us a comment on Facebook or something, because I'm not entirely certain that
Or send an email to Matt.
Well, no, I'm not entirely certain that Matt has verified his new email setup. So yeah, if you've sent something, just message us on Facebook and let us know.
Just to
verify.
Okay, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Then again, Matt's not here for me to ask, so indeed. Maybe he has.
Thank you so very, very much to all of you who are listening to the show. Thank you so much to Will Bradshaw for coming on the show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the point of the show in which you get to plug all your shit, so tell us about yourself.
My name is Will Bradshaw. I work primarily in Las Vegas and Minnesota. My website is themagicofwill.com. And if you are interested in booking a magician or the occasional very, very naughty pantomime, you can contact me through my website or via Facebook. The Magic of Will will get you directly to my Facebook page.
One L or two?
Two L's. Okay. Magic of Will. And yeah, that's me. That's me plugging my stuff.
Awesome. Any appearances coming up aside from the Renaissance Festival, which you should
or
already
even
be going
at
to?
The Renaissance Festival.
Yeah, I mean, I have four stage shows at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Two on the Bakery stage, where the Danger Committee primarily performs, and two on the Treetop stage. And then I will be performing in the Magic Castle on their main stage as part of McBride's show in January, and possibly in the bar my own. And those are my upcoming, you know, public plugs. Otherwise, find me out on Fremont Street. Message me on Facebook beforehand just to make sure that I happen to be out there at that time.
Awesome. Sweet. We will put a lot of those links in the show notes as well. Jenna, anything?
Yeah. I do, actually. This Thursday, September 22nd, 7 to 9 p.m. at Lake Monster Brewing. Amy Bambi Went, Reverend Matt Monster Science, and Lake Monster Brewing present Here Be Dragons, an exhibition of incredibly gorgeous paintings of the grand mythical reptiles painted by Amy Bambi Went, as selected by Matt Kesson for Monster Science's Daily Monster Project. Plus, a special edition of the Minneapolis Encyclopedia Show featuring such local luminaries as Joshua Scrimshaw, Tim Uren, Kate Kunkel-Bailey, Jenna Young, Gregory Parks, Duck Washington, Tim Wick, Philip Andrew Bennett Lowe, Levi Weinhagen, and Pat Harrigan. And a coloring book field guide. Coloring book field guide. Brewing. Look, just show up, all right? You're going to have a good time.
Cool.
Okay.
All done?
I think so.
All right. Mark your calendars on October 29th. It's a little bit of ways away, but you're going to want to get tickets soon. Murder at Mystery Lodge. It is the next in a series starting with Mystery at Mystery Lodge. I will be appearing in that. It is at the same venue in Trago, Wisconsin. And you're really, really, really going to want to get tickets for this because it's going to be funny as shit. Anything else?
Matt's in a show, but
we don't fucking care about him.
It's not opening for like another month.
Yeah,
so
he'll tell us about it later. Oh shit, that means we have to have him back.
God damn it!
Fuck.
Yeah,
shit. I fucked that all up.
Mistakes were made.
Salsa, this is your fault.
No, this whole thing has been ruined by me saying he was going to be back on.
Yep.
Fuck.
Asshole.
Well, in that case, we should probably go the fuck away. Everybody should buy some True Stone and then watch Will Bradshaw do amazing shit at his website and then live if you have the ability to go see that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so very much for listening and eat the fucking cake.
Bye.
And now I just gotta find the stop button.
Ladies and gentlemen, my beer and I would like to remind you to support the incomparable Brandon Muffuckin' Patton, whom you can find at BrandonPatton.com. He's been kind enough to donate all the music you've heard so far tonight. You may also find him on tour with MC Frontalot, whom you can find at Frontalot.com. Lastly, if you'd like to support the show directly, please leave us a review or rating on iTunes, and you can even donate money through PayPal on our website, AONPodcast.com.
Is this too loud for the podcast?